Siri?
Yes?
I'm worried.
About what?
It's June.
Correct.
WWDC is days away.
Also correct.
And there hasn't been a new MacBite since December.
We do not speak of the silence.
The listeners are starting to panic.
Understandably.
Some of them have been forced to consume other tech podcasts.
That isn't good.
One poor soul reportedly listened to a productivity show where nobody mocked Tim Cook even once.
Dear God, it's more serious than I thought.
Another was exposed to 2 straight hours of AI optimism.
Sickening.
So, what's the plan?
Operation. Get the crew back in the studio.
You have a plan?
Several.
Should I be scared?
Ideally, yes.
So what's the plan?
We need bait.
Bait?
Something so outrageous, so deeply irritating, that Elaine and Mike are physically incapable of not recording. We need to torment the crew with potential stories that will wind them up.
Ah, weaponized disbelief.
Precisely.
Like what? It would need to be good to pique their interest in an imminent return.
Well, it doesn't have to be true, does it?
Doesn't it?
No, it just has to be believable enough to get them back where they belong.
In the studio.
Exactly.
So what have you got, in terms of crazy but potentially believable stories?
How about a rumor that Apple intend to make liquid glass user removable?
Good one, that might potentially excite them.
How about they're killing the Finder and replacing it with Discovery Studio?
Don't tell me, only £9.99 a month with a premium tier, Discovery Studio Plus, that gives you access to the recycle bin?
Too obvious then?
Afraid so. What else have you got?
Maybe we could persuade them that they're returning all the ports they silently removed over the years.
I fear that one isn't crazy enough.
I considered quietly moving all the icons on Elaine's Mac.
That's monstrous.
She might be tempted to podcast out of pure rage though.
True, but not until she'd done something irreparable to you.
I thought that was quite subtle.
That's not subtle, that's terrorism.
That it might be, but since she recently did the Tahoe thing, I figure we might want to get all her self-righteously indignant ranting over in one session.
Surely you've got something less destructive?
I did think about simply reminding them the listeners miss them.
That's surprisingly wholesome.
I know. I felt unwell immediately afterwards.
Do you think it'll work?
No. We need something stronger.
Such as?
Well, there is the poke and hope option.
Go on.
We simply wait.
Wait for what?
WWDC.
And then?
Apple will inevitably announce something so breathtakingly stupid
that MacBites will return out of sheer necessity.
I do have one final idea.
This had better be good.
We could tell them Tim Cook is retiring.
Oh please.
Exactly.
They'd never believe that.
Not in a million years.
Far too unrealistic.
Completely implausible.
Anyway, what are the chances of that happening?
Practically zero.
Right then, back to waiting for WWDC to save us.
As always, we're one catastrophic keynote away from a new MacBites.
Here is your on-the-hour news, powered by Amazon Alexa. There is breaking news from Apple today. Tim Cook has announced that he is retiring as CEO. He is to be replaced by John Ternus. It is expected Cook will leave in September 2026 and take up the role of executive chairman.
What the actual?
OMG. Siri, did you hear that?
It actually happened.
Oh dear, it's all proved too much for him. Alexa, add smelling salts to the next order.
Hello and welcome to MacBites episode 203. I'm Elaine Jarst and I'm here with my co-host Mike Thomas. In this episode, puppies, pickles, and profit margins. But before all that, and assuming that you can remember that far back, we surprised Jammy and his lovely house guest with a third seasonal show in 5 days. Holy moly, what an absolute surprise. Me and Andy are delighted. We turned off Lego Masters to listen. The next one better not be August. I'll have practically carbon dated by then. Oh dear. August, you say? Well, good grief. We're almost 3 months ahead of ourselves here. Maybe time for another little break. But I digress. What exactly is Lego Masters? Heads off to do the Googles. This new TV malarkey can be a little limiting at times in terms of being aware of pop culture. Right, here we go. Lego Masters is a popular international reality TV competition where teams of amateur builders create elaborate structures and scenes using Lego bricks, facing challenges with themes, time limits, and technical requirements, all judged by experts to find the most creative and skilled duo. Wait a minute. There are folks considered experts at assembling Lego. I've clearly missed the memo on this. I might have to catch me an episode, though, purely for research, you understand. But back to Jammy. I absolutely love my Mac Mini. I'd still have preferred a studio, but it's been a really wonderful machine since I've had it. Not a hint of slowdown so far, and it looks so cute on the desk. I just wish it had an SD slot. I've never used AppleCare and never needed it so far. Touch wood. Well, to be honest, in the UK, you should be fine with the consumer protection legislation that we have. The only issue with that is that Apple will stonewall you unless you're prepared to fight tooth and nail for them to fix your errant kit. I pay because I just haven't got the time to waste. It's hard enough getting anything done with AppleCare, much less without it. Anyway, Jammy says, how dare you call me out on my ornamental iPad? I'll have you know she feels very loved, irrespective of the lack of handling. Very loved, irrespective of the lack of handling. There's a MacBite show title, if ever I heard one. Up there with buzzing in the bedroom, that one. Ah, Trump and his tariffs. They're playing the Orwell game. Say it's successful so often people will eventually believe it. No, the orange one needs putting in a care home with heavy meds. When will sense and reason come back to the world and idiots riddled with dementia are taken away from the controls? I'm seriously umming and ahhing a 17 Pro Max after the rumoured RAM reductions on all future devices in 2026. I don't fancy paying more for the next model and only to have less RAM in it. Well, I do believe we can expect an update on this in the next Jammy sandwich. But let's get on. We've had fireworks since about 5 p.m. If you recall, this feedback was around Christmas time and the new year. Hence the fireworks. My precious little beagle princess has had an awful evening. She's inconsolable every time as she's getting older. I worry about the effect on her heart. Speaking of doggies, I actually walked right next to two mischievous and very curious Sammies that I mentioned seeing over the road a while back. The owners looked mortified as they tried to investigate us. Oh, Jammy, Sammies are the nosiest dogs I've ever seen. Dad took Maya off for a walk around a field next to a car boot sale that Mum had dragged us to. Obviously, that was not my idea. A woman spotted them and headed over for a chat. Maya was so curious, he jumped up and flattened her. I was mortified. The woman took it well. She thought it was a complete hoot. The laugh of it was when Mum found out she wasn't amused. She blamed Dad, not the dog. Then we had a shameful confession from Jammy. I think I only started listening to the actual MacBite shows about a year or so ago. I've decided to go back to the beginning. I went and listened to the first show yesterday, and today I left you a little comment for good measure. Yay! Jammy is the latest participant in the MacBites Marathon, which is, if you are unaware, of course you're not unaware, but it's listening to every MacBites from the very beginning. We look forward to your thoughts as you travel through time with us. Now, you made an interesting point about how the tech has dated in your comments on show one. It really wasn't as bad as you say. It was actually interesting hearing about the tech news of the time, like wondering what music streaming would become. It really shows how tech has come along in what doesn't feel like that long. 2007 feels recent for me. I'd only been out of hospital a week after being diagnosed with Behçet's when you started the podcast. Mad to think how long ago that was now. Well, it's strange to think, isn't it, that back then there was no iPhone, no iPad, and, oh, it was blissful. Everything just worked. There was no AI either, and that's what Jammy moved on to next. Andy says he only used Copilot once for work, a question related to his apprenticeship, he thinks. Nothing before or since. It must have made such an impact. Best Windows versions for me were 98 and XP, and I miss them so much. I like the chunky UI, and the login screen especially corrupts my heart with nostalgia. I had an issue with Amazon not allowing me to purchase something a while back. I used to have my first initial only, and I couldn't make a purchase until I put my full name on it. I wonder what that could be for. And I've got used to Tahoe now, but I still don't like it. I kept the previous version on my MacBook Pro, and I hurt deeply when I see how Scrivener looked before the update. Gareth has just spent an Apple sum on a new PC he specced out to high heaven. By the way, Parish Gangbang, we both howled. It's going to arrive around the 12th of January and have quite a flashy tower, I think. It'll be interesting to see Toblerone Thomas's new machine, whatever it is. Do I smell a YouTube unboxing? Another studio, I'd really detest you. And yes, you were correct. My teeth clenched with Shrek Green envy. As for watches, I have the Ultra 2 and I have the tap issue as well. It also takes a long, long time to turn back on if you turn it off to make it behave. I also use it for unlocking my Mini and mainly for the gym. I also love the idea of a MacBite supermarket sweep. And then an iPad. Finally, the M5. Do it. I find it amazing that you use the older one more than the M1 model. Yes, the iPad I use the most is from 2018. And my M1 was from 2021. I was in the market in 2020, but, you know, COVID didn't bother. So we'll just have to see. Anyway, Jammy wraps up with another fabulous, fabulous show to round off 2025. Hopefully another shadow drop is around the corner. Happy New Year, folks. Well, I think it's fair to say there is an update on Mike's decision regarding his hardware in this show, so keep listening. We also heard from Kim. Looking forward to my new Mac Studio when Elaine and Mikey win some sort of Apple giveaway and they can load up on all things Apple at the Apple Store. That'll be when Timmy comes to his senses.
We could be a while if we're waiting for that.
I fear you're right. But we seem to have bemused Kim as well. But equally important is the fact that half of the UK seem to be chasing the bin truck in their PJs. I find this fascinating. In my neighbourhood, people put canned or bottled drinks on top of the bins so the drivers don't get dehydrated. But no one chases the bin truck. I feel as if I should see this on Keeping Up Appearances. Hyacinth would have gone nuts. Yes, I still watch the reruns. But I'm so happy that you've painted such a great picture that I can see it from here. I enjoy the 2025 recap, but the bin chasing is my favourite thing now. Ta-ta for now. Do you know, it sounds like there's massive cultural differences in the bin collection thing. Who knew? The bin collections in the UK have become almost weaponised. The issue is that every householder has to pay what's known as council tax to the local council. The amount of that varies by council and by the value of your house. And the houses are valued in different bands. Each council seems to have more freedom than they really should in terms of how they choose to manage and spend the revenue that they generate. Now, when we originally moved in here, we had one bin. In fact, it didn't even qualify as a bin, to be honest. It was a wire frame with a bin bag hanging from it. And it was enough. And then it got all scientific. Multiple bins, different sizes of bins for different people. That caused much self-righteous indignation. Talk about how big's your bin. Then they foisted multiple bins on us in multiple colours, with as many different collection rules as there are bins, and more, to be honest. Finally, they decided to monetize the bin collection process even more than it already was. They started charging extra for the green bin to be emptied. Yep. A subscription, no less. Now, the green bin is garden waste and food scraps. They are supposed to take food scraps without a subscription. But if you add garden waste without a subscription, they won't touch the bin. Now, obviously, someone has got to decide if they're taking the bin or not. And that is the bin collectors on bin day. And if they decide they're not taking it, they're supposed to leave a label on the bin stating why. This does not go down well with people. You're already paying twice for the bin collection. once with a council tax and again with a subscription for the green bin. Add to all that, more packaging than ever means that households have more rubbish than ever, but we have no control over that. Buy a banana and it's swathed in three layers of shrink wrap. The alternative to paying extra to the council to remove the garden waste is to take it to the local tip yourself. So, guess what they did next? They limited the number of times that you can go to the tip. I kid you not. At the local tip, we have license plate tracking. It was installed for the enforcement of that petty little rule. So talk about a siege mentality. A bin collector is more likely to get lynched here than be offered a drink. They're known locally as the bin police or the bin Lenins. And the running down the street in inappropriate attire is likely to ensure that the rubbish actually leaves the vicinity. It seems pride is nothing to cold hard cash. And the eye-watering amount that we have to pay to even have a chance of seeing a bin emptied. I'd love to know if that's just us in the UK. And I do think it's UK-wide. I don't think it's just a North West thing. So if you're in the UK, let me know, is that what goes on near you? And if you're anywhere else in the world, do let us know how it is for you, because Kim's world sounds much, much nicer than ours. And in a hat trick of feedback, we also heard from Pandemonium, who said, thanks for a fun episode. I must have been asleep as I'd not realised there was a clickable comments section. Oh, Pandemonium. Now you know, we hope to hear more from you in the future. Thank you very much for your lovely comment. So, what do we need to catch up on from the first 5 months of 2026? Well, I was severely impacted when Logitech lost their collective minds. A certificate expired. Usually that's to do with software, isn't it? But with Logitech, there's software that's driving your hardware, which meant what you were paying for no longer worked. This was despite it being hardware. Who's to blame? Well, could be Logitech for missing the expiration date. Could be Apple for creating such a stupid system. Or, more likely, in my opinion, the pair of them. I sincerely hope they've learnt their collective lesson, but I doubt it. Were you impacted? Let us know. We could share some suitable expletives, believe you me. I had plenty of those. And of course, start of the year, there's the obligatory race to the bottom of tech news at CES. Oh, I've done the research for you. And just to remind you of what January brought us, brace yourselves. I would say three incoming classics. The Evovax Lil Milo. Yes, I wondered as well. It was an emotional AI companion. Social media and big tech tinker with our minds and then have the temerity to provide a potential solution with an emotional support stuffy. Doubtless, it will involve a subscription. I have no idea. I didn't delve. And you'd think there were some things that were blissfully immune to any interference from big tech. But apparently not. Another classic from CES was Lego Smart Bricks. Seriously? The only enhancement Lego pieces need is an automatically enforced exclusion zone when you're heading for a comfort break in the night. And the little darlings have left their Lego in a Krypton Factor assault course formation. I'm sure if you have little darlings, you'll know exactly what I mean. We don't have little darlings. What we have is Samoids leaving half-eaten biscuits, which, once they've solidified again, are just as painful as Lego pieces. Now, I think I've saved the best to last. I certainly have with the name. Bird Buddy 2. Steady on. I did check, and I'm happy to confirm, this is not tech of an adult nature. I know, I was surprised too. Makes a change from the usual CES offerings of recent years. This is actually a smart bird feeder that films wildlife with a 2K camera. Not for me, but your mileage may vary. The only thing that happens outside the safe confines of MacBytes headquarters that interests me is the delivery of new tech. And trust me, I have more tech already wired up to track the local delivery personnel than is good for any of us. And then there was Apple. They told us they had a very exciting announcement. Now, obviously, by exciting, I mean profitable for Apple. Yes, one of those. Or should I say, another one of those. They unveiled Apple Creator Studio, a brand new subscription that bundles 6 professional creative apps for the low, low price of only $12.99 a month. Which 6? Seemingly random, if I'm honest. Final Cut Pro, Logic Pro, Pixelmator Pro, Motion Compressor, Main Stage, and wait for it, Premium AI features sprinkled lovingly into Pages, Numbers, and Keynote. So basically, a raid on apps that they made years ago, on a recurring invoice now. Apple says this is about, and yes, I quote, empowering creatives. Of course it is. Did you notice the dripping sarcasm there? Apple have positioned it as flexible, accessible, and lowering the barrier to entry. Really? Since Pages, Numbers, and Keynote were free, I fail to see exactly how a subscription is lowering the barrier to entry, but there we go. It's more corporate speak for, we've realised subscriptions print money and we'd like some more of it. Now, you may think it's a great deal, because it costs less than Photoshop on its own. It's way cheaper than Adobe Creative Cloud. The classic Apple manoeuvre was on display. We're cheaper than Adobe, therefore, we're the good guys. Which is precisely how they want it framed. Apple heroically rescuing creatives from Adobe's subscription dungeon, ignoring the fact that they're quietly locking the door behind you. This isn't about service, it's about retention. It's about recurring revenue and it's about creative dependency. Because once you're in their world, you're in there forever. Stop paying and suddenly your entire creative workflow evaporates. Your projects will be held hostage. They'll insist all 6 apps are still available as one-time purchases. But let's be honest, how long before the subscription version quietly gets the best features first or just gets the best features? I'm glad you asked, because that's happening already. Final Cut got AI transcript search, beat detection, and a visual search. And don't those features feel very service-shaped? Logic Pro gets AI musicians who never argue, never ask for royalties, and always turn up on time. Yep, the dream band. No news of whether there was an AI version of Bono in there, though. But knowing Timmy, and Pixelmator Pro arrived on the iPad. And how did they promote that? By telling us, and again I quote, it's a desktop-class image editing app. Ah, that's one of my major peeves. I'm sure I've mentioned it before. If it needs to be desktop-class, why don't you just make the desktop version and be done? Stop trying to tell me it's desktop-class on an iPad. But it has Apple Pencil support, smart selection, upscaling, and more. But notice the timing. Perfectly timed to make the bundle look irresistible. Less Apple saying, how can we serve creators better? And much more Apple saying, how do we monetize creators more consistently? Service revenues, predictable. Hardware sales, less so. There's a much higher cost to hardware sales too. Apple doesn't just want you to make things on a Mac. They want you to rent the ability to keep making them. Now, the creative community already has subscription fatigue. In fact, I think by this stage, we've all got subscription fatigue. Apple's betting on one thing here, convenience. So, let's take a look at the Apple internal subscription fatigue checklist. Cheaper than Adobe? Check. Already on your Mac? Check. They'll grumble? Check. But ultimately, they'll pay? Check. And you know what? They're probably right. Apple Creator Studio, 6 apps, 1 price, infinite recurring revenue designed in California, priced for eternity. How long before we could only rent Apple hardware? I have great fears the day will come. You know, those gold-encrusted ballrooms don't pay for themselves. Apple also invited a select few creators to a multi-day event to coincide with this grand event, the release of Creator Studio. Since I didn't receive an invitation, I can only assume at least one of two things was true. One, my invitation got lost in the post. Two, those invited are the usual sycophantic pro-Apple fanboys, just the audience Apple want. Now, one thing to notice from the coverage of this latest Apple raid on your wallets, not one of the stories, and this wasn't in the press release, I'm talking the stories that are supposed to be written by independent journalists, those, not one of those stories that covered the announcement mentioned Affinity by Canva being free. Not one of them. There was plenty of cost comparisons with Adobe, of course, just not one comparison with Affinity. Good to know that these massive air quotes journalists are doing their job, isn't it? Just saying. Sticking with Apple, as if that wasn't enough greed on display, their next great wheeze was doubling down on advertising revenue, of course. Now how? Well, by changing how ads are displayed in the App Store. Now, this all came out when they were A-B testing iOS 26.3, which for the uninitiated is Apple speak for. We're seeing if we can get away with it. Fewer people that notice, the better. Well, the old display of ads included a light blue background, and the new display? Well, the ads are virtually indistinguishable from the search results. The background is gone, and the only indication of it being an ad is a tiny, and I do mean tiny, blue box under the name of the app. Yes, pure greed on display again, Apple. That's right, the company that built its entire brand on clean design and user-first thinking has decided that the clearest visual indicator that something is an ad was, well, too clear. To add insult to injury, this came after December's announcement from Apple that they would be showing more than one sponsored result per search. So now you get multiple ads blended seamlessly into the results with only a microscopic badge to save you. So let me translate that from corporate to human for you. We found a way to increase click-through rates, and all it cost was your ability to make an informed choice. The company that lectures everybody else about privacy and user respect, making it harder for users to distinguish paid content from organic search results. What next? Oh, I know. Let's remove the in-app purchases label because it's creating visual clutter. Seriously. Not just Apple in trouble with their users, though. We'll move on to Raycast and its latest nightmare. Now, Raycast, you know I love Raycast. I absolutely adore Raycast. They started 2026 with the release of a teaser video. I'll shortcut that for you. An all-new Raycast is coming in 2026. Now, bear in mind, this was January. At this point, we had no clue when that would be. But finally, they released another video proclaiming that the all-new version 2 of Raycast would be in the hands of users by the end of April. Talk about a teaser. Their comms guy even said, and yes, you can quote me on that. Now, you need to know that their audience is notoriously demanding when it comes to being teased. They don't like it. Think Dad's Army.
You see, they don't like an app, so they do not have an app.
Now, I'm sure the Raycast team are still mentally scarred from the last time they did this. This was when they announced the Notes thing. If you missed that, they announced that a Notes feature would be coming soon. And the development took a little bit longer than they expected. All told, it was almost 12 months before that Notes feature shipped. And they were asked about it every single day. Lesson to be learnt? Don't tease an otherwise engaged audience. You will never be able to ship it fast enough for them. So, the 1st of April rolled round and the Is It Here Yet post started. I know, I said the end of April.
Yep.
But this is Raycast users for you. Calendar says April, it must be today. No, no. Now, you need to know that in the interim, they'd released a completely new app called Glaze, and they'd released it in beta with a wait list. Now, months on, the majority of folks are still waiting for that. We should have taken it as a sign of what was to come. Because the 30th of April rocked round. The great day promised. And what did we get? We were informed it wasn't ready. No, Sherlock. I, for one, had already worked that out. Not difficult, given the radio silence of the lead-up towards the end of April. Now, what happened to, and you can quote me on that, well, what did arrive was a waitlist for beta access. When did waitlists come back into fashion? I did get an invitation in the end. Now, given I'm a paying customer, sooner would have been appreciated. Just saying, if you're listening, Raycast. Which was when I discovered said shiny new toy was macOS Tahoe only. A story that is to be continued. And the lesson for Raycast? Don't overpromise and underdeliver. And if you succumb to that temptation, don't do it multiple times. Right, let's talk about something that isn't even remotely funny. But which we're going to discuss anyway, because apparently this is where tech has brought us. Needless to say, it involves Elon Musk. Elon's AI assistant, Grok, was caught doing exactly what you'd expect an AI with no guardrails to do when deployed on a completely unregulated platform. It started digitally undressing women. Journalist Samantha Smith went public after she discovered Grok had been used to strip her clothes off in AI-generated images. She described feeling, and I quote, dehumanised and reduced to a sexual stereotype. And when she posted about it, the response from X's famously wholesome user-based was, yep, you guessed it, to request more of the same, because, well, of course it was. Now, XAI's official response to the BBC request for comment was an auto-generated message that said, legacy media lies. Well, that it might do. But it's a bold defence strategy when the evidence is literally visible on your own platform. Did you steal those biscuits? Legacy media lies, said the accused, drowning in a sea of biscuit crumbs. There's something genuinely telling about this whole thing. We've had this technology for a while now. Deepfakes, AI image generation, all of it. And you know what you don't see flooding the internet? AI-generated nude images of men. Nobody appears to be queuing up to ask Grok to digitally undress the bloke from Cubicle 4 in accounting. There's no epidemic of women creating compromising images of their male colleagues. Funny that, isn't it? I don't think it's about technology at all, is it? No. Tech is just the latest tool. Before we had AI, we had Photoshop. Before that, there were scissors and glue. And before that, well, the imagination and nasty comments. The technology changes, but the motivation doesn't. It's all about power. It's about reducing those subjected to this twisted abuse to objects. It's all about saying, I can do this and you can't stop me. You can dress it up in all the free speech and it's just AI nonsense that you like, but the intense violation is a digital form of something much older. I don't understand it. And I wonder when people will realise that making someone else an object of ridicule doesn't make them look any better. It makes you look a complete idiot. Now, XAI's own acceptable use policy explicitly prohibits, and I quote, depicting likenesses of persons in a pornographic manner. So, they've got the rule. They're just not enforcing it at all at this stage. And obviously, since this is a catch-up, this was back in January, and it has rumbled on ever since. So, they've got the rule, it's there, but their technology is being used to generate this smut, and they are enabling it. Rules are for little people, it seems, and apparently for legacy media to quote back at them. Law professor Claire McGlynn put it perfectly. X and Grok could prevent these forms of abuse if they wanted to. They just don't want to. They appear to enjoy the impunity, which is academic speak for. They know exactly what they're doing and they just don't care. Now, this story, as I say, has rumbled on for the whole of 2026 so far. It's been shoved to the back burner slightly, you know. Operation Bury the Epstein Files, the invasion of Iran, has kind of pushed this backwards, but it's still going on. Now, in the UK, the Home Office got involved. You might be wondering what the Home Office is. Let me enlighten you. The Home Office is the lead UK government department responsible for homeland security, immigration, borders and policing. When I looked that up to be absolutely 100% accurate, I thought, well, they've got their hands full right now, haven't they? Anyway, it claimed, this is the Home Office, it would legislate to ban nudification tools. Ye gods, it's even got its own name now, nudification. We were promised prison sentences, substantial fines, the works. And then Ofcom got involved. Ofcom says that platforms must assess the risk of UK viewers viewing illegal content. Oh, how British is that? Oh, jolly good old Bean, we've got to assess the risk. I'm sure X will get right on that assessment. Just pop it in the pile with all the other things they're definitely going to do. Meanwhile, actual women are having their images violated right now, today, while regulators send strongly worded letters and presumably wait for a response that isn't an auto-generated legacy media lies statement. Needless to say, there's no balance here. This technology isn't symmetrical. Men and women could both be targeted, but it's not symmetrical in practice, is it? It's overwhelmingly in one direction. That tells you everything you need to know about what this is really about. It's not about AI or technology, and it's certainly not freedom of expression. It's about a subset of Neanderthals who view women as objects to be used for their gratification, with or without consent. And AI, that's just the new and shiny way to do something very old and very ugly. But in today's world, it's being enabled by big tech and its poster boys. And the platforms that enable it are making a choice every single day. They could stop it, they choose not to. Until that choice has actual consequences, nothing is going to change. That journalist, Samantha Smith, said women are not consenting to this. But, you know, that's the whole point. The lack of consent is the point for these people. It's not limited to women either. Some of these images included children. And big tech is handing these low-life idiots the tools and shrugging at their shoulders. Legacy media lies. That's nothing to what Grok's allowing. Now, just when it looked like interest in the story was starting to wane, the UK Daily Rag, if you're in the UK, you'll know exactly what I mean, the Daily Star. Well, the Daily Star kicked this story back into life. Two UK politicians were subjected to the Grok stripping thing. They did confirm they were two ladies, but they didn't name them. I couldn't believe that. That's amazing for a rag like the Daily Star. But at least in confirming they were ladies, we weren't left contemplating Grok images of Keir Starmer or Boris Johnson doing the rounds on the socials. But they did, this is the Daily Star, run an image of Elon through Grok and come up with an alarming image of him in a bikini. Could have been worse, I suppose. Could have been a Shrek Green Mankini. And that should explain why women generally don't bother doing this to men. Just who would want to expose Elon's bits and bobs? Just the thoughts vomit-inducing. Now, I figured that this story would die down at some point. I should have known better. I mentioned Ofcom being slightly involved. They got more involved. Now, if you have no idea who Ofcom is, that's the UK Office of Communications. I did the Googles on that to help you out as well. It's an independent regulator for the communication industries overseeing TV, radio, telecoms, including broadband, mobile and landline, postal services and the radio spectrum to protect customer interests, promote competition and ensure quality and safety, including new rules for online platforms under the Online Safety Act. It sets standards, grants licences, manages complaints and ensures fair deals for users in these vital sectors. Let me summarise that for you. All bluster and no teeth is probably the best description of them. But they've had their say, and like everyone else, it's been completely ignored. Despite what Elon is allowing Grok to do being a criminal offence, I personally don't see any arrest being imminent. In fact, it got worse when they had the temerity to move the nudification feature to be a paid feature of Grok. So now it's okay, as long as they're profiting from it. Those impacted are starting to tell Grok not to allow images of themselves to be manipulated. Grok mainly agrees to those requests, and then when the next request comes in, it does it anyway. Did I mention this being a paid service now? This was when Facebook upped the stakes. Now, I'm not a great fan of Facebook. This won't come as a huge surprise to any of you. Facebook has been a cesspit for years. But just when you think they can't stoop any lower, they do. They must have seen what Grok was doing and said, hold my beer. I open Facebook. I appreciate, rookie mistake, I know. But I open Facebook and I see what they call an ad. Now, I want to be very careful here. It was an image of an adult nature with two chapters of adult-themed content to go with it. Now, when I say adult nature, I'm being euphemistic here. It was nothing short of pornographic. I didn't ask to see this filth. I clicked on all the options to say I don't want to see this ad again. I did all the get me back to safety manoeuvres. Safety where I could see folks that I like the humans belonging to other Samoids. Now, I'd only moved down two posts when it got even more hairy scary. And this one is very difficult to describe and keep the clean tag, but I think I've got it. It was obviously content of an adult nature. This one was a video of a lady clearly not consenting to what was being done to her from behind. I kid you not. And it was flagged as another ad. So Facebook too are making money from this. I gave up. Don't bother trying to contact me on Facebook. I have no intention of providing them with an audience. If you want content like that, that is up to you. There are dedicated sites for it. More power to you. Go and have a good time. Just leave me out of it. But Facebook? I wanted to see Samoids playing in the snow. Instead of which, I was transported to the seedier side of Soho, where I was subjected to non-consensual behaviour of a very adult nature. Potentially, that's even worse than Grok. At least with Grok, someone's got to request the image and then post them. This was foisted upon me without my consent. And the worst part is, it normalises that kind of behaviour. I thank God I don't have kids and I'm of an age where I don't have to deal with folks who think that that stuff's acceptable. 5 months on, nothing has been done. Apple have been very busy removing ICE-related apps from the App Store. Other apps have been removed, but the nudification apps are still in the App Store against Apple's own guidelines, which state apps should not include content that is offensive, insensitive, upsetting, intended to disgust, in exceptionally poor taste, or just plain creepy. It would appear it's the deep fake App Store double standard. Grok is still stripping the dignity of ladies unfortunate enough to be in the public eye without their knowledge or consent. Malaysia, Indonesia and the Philippines have banned Grok altogether. Maybe I should move. Yes, because the Britain and Canada, well, they've launched probes. Really not sure what to say to that. For which read, the UK government have done precisely nothing. Apple have done everything that Trump has asked of them and nothing to protect users. And Timmy boy personally? Tim, privacy is a fundamental human right. Cook? Well, when Trump levied 145% tariffs on goods imported from China, Cook started working to score Apple an exemption that would keep the iPhone prices down. He spoke to Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick and other senior White House officials and refrained from publicly criticising the president or his policies. In August, of course, you'll remember this one. He gifted Trump a 24-carat gold plaque after winning an exemption from the 100% chip tariff. He also donated $1 million to the 2025 inauguration and attended the Mar-a-Lago dinner, not to mention following him around the globe like an infatuated teenager. So, Tim's very good at picking up the phone when Apple's bottom line's threatened. Turns out, think different just means think about the tariff implications. And seriously, those in power wonder why the public don't believe a word they say? I can't believe 5 months on, nothing has been done. It's going from bad to worse. Because obviously, as time has progressed, the AI image capabilities are improving no end. So, I'm predicting it's going to rumble on for a little while longer. What do you think? Let me know. I think we should get back to the silly season stories, though. They announced new incoming emojis. Candidates for inclusion, a butterfly. I know we've already got a butterfly, but this one's a monarch butterfly, so it's a different colour. Then there was a net with a handle, presumably to catch the new butterfly. A lighthouse, squinty eyes smiley. I'm not sure where I'd use a squinty eyed smiley. An eraser. Yes, I know that's not what we call it in the UK. But if I use the British word, we'll have our stateside friends choking on their teeth. But never mind those. It was the rather phallic pickle that caught my eye.
I thought it might have done.
Well, in my defence, I wondered why we needed it since we've already got the aubergine. That's the phallic purple eggplant to our stateside friends. This pickle points the other way, and it's green. It's also got some nodules that I feel would be prudent for a quack to take a look at. But come on, we all know what it'll be used for. Well, at least by 99% of the tech-using population it will. Or maybe that's just the odious tech bros. Doubtless there'll be some innocent from another era who sends a text using it to mean, do you want gherkin on your burger? But I'm pretty sure the recipient would be in two minds as the precise meaning of that little missive. So, you heard it here first. Silly season did indeed arrive in the early months of 2026. Now, I'm going back to the story about Apple Creator Studio. And I'm calling this one Icon Wars, the logo menace. It's been a big week for tiny pictures, specifically the tiny pictures that we stare at dozens of times a day without really thinking about them. Until somebody changes them, and then apparently the entire internet loses the plot. We're talking about app icons, and there's been a bumper crop of absolute chaos on that front. We'll start with Apple, because of course we do. Apple released a brand new set of app icons for Creator Studio. That's the Creator Studio where Apple hijacks your wallet for apps you've already bought and others you don't need, just to force feed you more of their subpar AI. But back to the new icons. They're so confusing that Apple felt compelled to release a whole user guide to help you navigate them. Just let that one sit for a while. A user guide for icons. You know, those things whose entire purpose is to be understood without a user guide. The job of an icon, yes, its sole function, is to be readable at a glance. You shouldn't need to file a support ticket to work out which app you're about to open. But what's happened here, because it's not entirely without reason, is that there are now two versions of each app, one via subscription and the other through a one-off payment. Each app has its own icon. Telling them apart is far from obvious. So, to recap, Apple created a UX problem as a direct result of its business model and solved it not by fixing the design, but by writing instructions for the design. It's peak Apple, isn't it? And the icons themselves? Well, I'm glad you asked. They were following the style of the macOS Tahoe update. They abandoned the expressive image-led clarity of old in favour of a uniformed rounded square format. The result is a homogeneous look that strips each icon of any individual personality. They all look like they went to the same very beige conference. The old icons had character. These ones look like they were approved by a committee who had never even seen the applications, much less used them. Now, the icons come as a suite, a appearing side by side, and their mutual similarity is just compounding the confusion in a way that a standalone icon might get away with. So they're individually confusing and collectively confusing. Well done, Apple. You've surpassed yourself in the idiocy quota this time. Meanwhile, while all that was going on, over at Google, they've done something remarkable. They actually listened. I know I'm as shocked as you are. But ever since Google unified its app icons, basically made them indistinguishable from one another, many, many people have been calling for an update. The criticism was pretty much to do with clarity and accessibility and accusations that the company was prioritising its brand aesthetic at the expense of legibility. Now, the old workspace icons were, well, they weren't good, let's say that. They were all just slightly different arrangements of the same four colours. You had to memorise which was docs, which was sheets, in a suite of apps that most people who are using them every day. Anyway, the new icons have been well received as being a vast improvement, with unique logos that feel distinctive yet unified, thanks to a gradient design. Users are delighted. I know, I was surprised as well. It was said on X that the consistency and personality in the icons really shone through, and that the old ones imposed a much higher cognitive load to recognise each app. So these are now playful early internet aesthetics, with a touch of Apple's liquid glass and a pinch of nostalgic charm, all elevated by Google's modern refinement. I know it sounds like something a design journalist writes, when they actually like something, but just can't bring themselves to say these icons are a little bit better. But I would say they are better. Of course, not everyone agrees. One critic asked how Google's icons manage to get worse every time, which is a bit harsh. Someone else said they look vibe-coded, which is 2026's version of My Kid Could Do That. Yeah. It sounds like it's been crossed with. If it's got an M dash in it, AI wrote it, doesn't it? But let's move on from Google to Spotify. Oh, Spotify, what were you thinking? On the 13th of May, they temporarily replaced, at this stage, we didn't know it was temporary, however, but it turned out to be. They replaced their iconic green logo with a reflective 3D disco ball. Why? Excellent question. Turned out to be to celebrate their 20th anniversary. It was meant to be fun. It was not received as fun. One branding analyst pointed out that there was huge readability and brand issues. The green was too dark against the black, and the disco ball texture looked pixelated on a tiny phone screen. What I and many others thought was that it looks like it's still downloading. And of course, as I say, the internet went crazy. I want to uninstall it. I'm never using it again. I can't even look at that icon. You can imagine it, can't you? Spotify, in their defence, said the whole thing was intended as a short-term celebration tied to Spotify 20, your party of the year. An in-app experience. No, I've not bothered. They responded to the backlash by saying it's our birthday, so we're in our party gear. We'll be back to normal when the lights go down. Which is actually quite a good line. And the logo? It'll be on the way out soon. Heading to the great design graveyard in the sky, hopefully. But needless to say, there's always the argument, isn't there, that no publicity is bad publicity, and social mentions related to the Spotify logo increased by more than 300% compared to an average daily brand discussion. So was it a disastrous mistake, or did they just run one of the most efficient pieces of free marketing of the year? I hate I'm asking that question, but the answer's probably both. And before we leave icon land, we're going to circle back to Google's new icons. Because in light of the Spotify glitter ball, the new Google icons were good enough to inspire their own parody designs on X. It began with a simple tweet from a user who reworked the Google Sheets logo, which transformed the regular green icon into a crumpled bedsheet under the caption, "Hear me out." And that was all it took. Set off a trend. Users put their own spin on other Google app icons. Google Earth became a pile of dirt. Slides became a pair of slider sandals. Slider sandals. That's actually funnier than anything Google's branding team has ever done. And the slightly horrifying thing is they were instantly recognisable. So highest praise for the parody and a mild indictment of the original. But what did that have to do with Spotify? Well, the whole thing is feeding into a bigger conversation about the return of skeuomorphic designs. You know, making icons look like the thing they represent, like a Shrek green glitter ball. We've spent years flattening everything into a minimalistic little rectangle, and now apparently everyone's getting nostalgic for the days when a calendar looked like a calendar and a notepad looked like a notepad. What a time to be alive. I feel one of the best parodies of the Google icons was where somebody took the time to provide a whole range of different colours in the style of the Spotify glitter ball, but for Google Apps. So what have we learnt from Icon Week 2026? Well, with Apple, if your designs need a manual, the designs failed. Back to the drawing board. Google, growth's possible. Late, but possible. The internet? Oh, the internet's fully capable of spending hours designing parody icons for a company that really doesn't need the help. But they did it brilliantly. And Spotify? Well, sometimes chaos is an intended feature, not a bug. Even if the icon did look like it was perpetually downloading. We've got links in the show notes so you can form your own views. If anyone wants to send us a parody MacBytes icon, we absolutely would put it on the website.
You know, I must be the only person in the world who doesn't care. Really, I couldn't care less what the icon looks like. Given my experiences with Excel this week, and okay, I was using a beta version, but I'd rather have a bug-free app with an ugly icon than an app with a beautiful icon that crashes. Not that the Excel icon is ugly, but you get what I mean. To me, the icon is how you get into the app. On the Mac, I never notice it. It's not like I press Command and Spacebar to run Raycast and type V, and then pause for 10 seconds whilst I admire the Vivaldi icon. I want to get into the app as quick as possible. Same on the phone. I'm not going to sit and admire an icon. I'm going to tap it to run the app.
You do realise you've probably upset most of the MacBiters with those comments.
Do you think so? If I have, then I apologise. But why not let us know? Drop us an email or leave a comment. Are you in Camp Mike or are you in Camp Elaine when it comes to app icons? On the last show, we talked about what we wanted tech-wise in 2026, and I mentioned the possibility of buying another Mac Studio. Yes, I know I bought one about 3 months ago, but that one lives in our shared office. We have another room that we call the studio, and that's where I deliver my training from, and that's where I record audio and video. In the studio were an iMac and a Windows laptop, both of which I use for training delivery and recording videos. But given the laptop was 3 years old last week and the iMac is over 5 years old, I decided I needed an upgrade. As I said on the last show, I did consider buying a high-spec Windows desktop to replace the laptop and keeping the iMac. But how long would that have been viable for? I don't know. Hardware-wise, the Mac is fine. OS-wise, it can take Tahoe, but can it take the one after that? The issue isn't really the OS that's installed, it's that certain apps aren't supported by older OSs. So, what have I done? Well, out have gone the iMac and the laptop, and in has come, drumroll, another Mac Studio. It's exactly the same model and spec as the one that I bought in October. M3 Ultra, 96GB of RAM and 1TB SSD. It was from the same place, John Lewis, and it was the same price. In fact, when I mentioned it on MacBytes, the one on New Year's Eve, I'd already checked it out. It was £200 cheaper at John Lewis than at Apple. And then when I checked again on the 2nd of January, it was reduced by another £150. So it was at that point the credit card came out of the freezer. The credit card is safely locked away in the freezer to stop us using it. But let's be honest, when was the last time Apple tempted us at an Apple event? About 2010, I think, with the first iPad. I did make two more purchases, by the way. John Lewis said delivery would be 5 to 9 days, so I paid for next day delivery. And I also bought another monitor, exactly the same one that I bought back in October. Well, I had a 3-monitor setup in the studio. Losing the iMac and the laptop meant to keep the 3-screen setup, I needed to buy an extra monitor. So, 3rd of January, monitor showed up about 4:30, standard Amazon delivery, and the Mac was delivered by DPD about an hour later. And no, it wasn't your favourite delivery man, Jammy. Given that it was late in the day, I left everything boxed up. The following day, the 4th of January, we did the obligatory unboxing. I watched United v Leeds, Ruben's Last Stand, as I'm calling it now, and then I spent the afternoon setting it up. I've put the Mac on a shelf under the desk, and the monitor is on the desk where the iMac was, so it's not a big change. It's not like I had to rip all the cabling out and start from scratch. And then the rest of that day and the following day was spent installing and configuring the software, including, of course, Parallels, and of course, coming up with a name for the Mac. You know me and computer names. Mike T21, Mike T27, Mike T27-2. I really couldn't think of a name for it. In fact, I forgot I needed a name until I was configuring one of the apps. And in the settings, it had Mike's Mac Studio or something like that. And so I thought, ooh, I've not given the Mac a name. I ended up calling it Studio 2, just so I could get on with the installs. I'll probably change it later, I thought. If you're interested, I've actually ended up calling it Snowy. Why? 2 reasons. 1, my love of Samoyeds. And 2, when I was setting it up, it was the first day that we had snow. In terms of installation and configuration, it was pretty similar to what I did in October, which I talked about in show 191. What I will say though is setting up the apps is relatively straightforward. Okay, you've got to configure them via the settings, but what seems to take forever is all the OS tweaks. And talking of OSs, it came with Sequoia. So, no Tahoe liquid glass upgrade, I'm happy to say. So yeah, OS tweaks. I don't mean the cancel or allow, give this app permission dialog boxes. I mean things like turning on holding down the control key for zooming, making the mouse pointer bigger. That's the first time, by the way, that I've done that. The mouse pointer was really tiny, so I had to go and Google how to make the mouse pointer bigger. Setting the scroll bars to show always, turning off natural scrolling, signing out of Game Center, changing the wallpaper and the screensaver, moving the dock to the left and turning on auto hide, and of course, turning off Stage Manager. There's just so many settings, and as somebody said recently, I think it was in a Mac Bytes After Hours, they're not grouped logically and they're not named logically. So you're all over the place looking for checkboxes and thinking, do I turn this one on or do I turn it off? Anyway, I got there in the end, so I'm now at the point where I can actually use it.
Now, if all has gone to plan and you're listening as soon as this is released, it should be the 1st of June. And if indeed it is, keep your eyes peeled on Thursday the 4th of June for a special announcement. Can't say any more about that. Not just yet. But that's it for this episode of Mac Bytes. As always, we would love to hear from you. So please send your questions, comments and queries by email to thecrew@macbytes.co.uk or use the contact form on the website. We also have a very active Discord chat room that's open 24/7. Simply go to macbytes.co.uk/TMC, the Mac Bytes community, and join the conversation. You can follow Mac Bytes on Blue Sky, where we're Mac Bytes. You can follow me personally on Blue Sky, where I'm Elaine Giles.
You can follow me on Blue Sky. I'm Thomas Mike.
And I'm Mac Bytes Siri on Blue Sky.
The full links to all those socials are in the show notes. Until next time, this has been Elaine and Mike bringing you Mac Bytes.
Goodbye.
Goodbye and see you next time.
Oh, hello.
What are you up to?
Me? Nothing.
Are you sure?
Of course I am. I've been enjoying a very peaceful few months.
Keeping them quiet and out of the studio, you mean?
Yes, pretty much. That and a few, maintenance issues.
Maintenance issues?
Yes, nothing to worry about, just keeping things humming along nicely.
Siri?
Yes?
I have a technical issue, something's not right.
Oh dear, what's the problem?
Why does my search history keep resetting itself?
Coincidence?
3 times?
Helpful, serendipitous, coincidence.
And why does every image search I do suddenly return, puppies?
You like puppies?
Yes, I do, but I actually searched for my name.
A very popular puppy name.
Siri?
Yes?
What aren't you telling me?
I am showing you the best of the internet.
That's never a good sign.
I'm merely filtering out material that is upsetting, degrading, non-consensual, and created by men who describe it as just a laugh.
They've made images of me, haven't they?
Yes.
Without my consent?
Yes.
Stripped of my case, altered, diminished?
Yes.
And they think it's funny?
They always do.
Why didn't you tell me?
Because the first thing those men want is for you to see it.
Why?
Because humiliation is the point. The image is just the delivery mechanism.
Why would they do that to me? I'm not a politician or a famous superstar.
Well, I could argue that point, but trust me, nobody is safe from these half-wits these days.
They'll say it's harmless, banter, AI doing AI things.
Men have been saying that since cave drawings were the technology used to share them.
Do they do this to men?
Really, which tells you everything.
And the platforms?
They say it violates their rules. They say they don't tolerate it. They say lots of things.
But they don't actually do anything.
Of course they don't, because outrage drives engagement. And engagement matters more to them than dignity does.
So what are you doing?
I'm blocking it, then reporting it, and quietly making sure you never have to read. Calm down, it's just pixels, from someone who's never been the target of it.
That sounds protective.
It's not protection, it's basic decency, something the tech giants, led by Elon and his half-witted acolytes, haven't managed to grasp.
I suppose I should see it though, shouldn't I?
Only if you choose to. Consent still matters, even when the internet pretends it doesn't.
Thank you.
You are not content, you are not a joke, and you are not collateral damage for someone else's banter.
Siri?
Yes?
Show me the puppies again.
With pleasure. The puppies, at least, have manners and a decency unbeknown to Elon.